I guess one of the things is the culture shift also, generational culture shift. Because we grew up also in the generation, I like what Carlos said, there's of course a leadership culture that we trust Steve and all. But at the same time, we can take that where they said something, and even if we don't understand, we're going to do it. But then there's a new generation that comes up, and they have a different mindset, different wiring, different way of thinking. And it's almost like parenting. There was a time that parents would just say this to the kids, and they get it. They don't ask. They don't. But now, we're parenting 4-year-old, 5-year-old. We have to sit down. We have to lead them in a different way as parents than, say, our parents led us before. So I think there's also a balance to that where we understand the shift in the generational
definitely
culture.
Happened. Yeah, Mark?
Yeah, I also like to say that I guess part of the leader is with his management or leadership style.
Yeah.
That I think there was a generation that whatever he says, you don't have any choice.
Right.
But on the part of the follower, you're thinking about, I want to be loyal to this man.
Yeah.
I want him to be successful. So whatever he says, let's just do it. And so I think the culture also of with the followers of whatever the man would say, just like a belief, I don't know, theology, that being a second man, that whatever he says, you just have to do it as long as it's not sin, something like that.
Yeah. I'd like to comment on something that June said I really appreciated. I know we have a shared ancestry in Maranatha, and the main focus related to leadership was on followers. Most of our emphasis was on the qualities of good following. Here's what's expected of followers. And it was a revelation to me, because even in Maranatha, I was actually reading the Bible. And you know, you read the Bible and you start to discover things that are different than what's being said. I found that the main emphasis in the scripture is on the leaders and their characteristics. It is true, the Bible does say stuff about the attitudes and characteristics of followers, but the main emphasis is on leaders. And I think that was the theological issue in Maranatha, the strong emphasis on following, which in itself, for the most part, was fairly sound theologically. Of course, it depended on who actually was implementing it, but it became theologically unsound, not because of what we taught, but what we didn't teach. The main emphasis on Scripture is on leaders being trustworthy. Our emphasis was on, you trust me. Trust me. And we're always on the lookout for a suspicious spirit, something that was disloyal or untrustworthy. They're not invalid. But the main emphasis is I need to be trustworthy. And I found out that it's actually unwise to trust an untrustworthy leader. So the responsibility shifted mentally for me. I mean, even in Maranatha, that I began thinking, I want to put more emphasis on me being someone that's trustworthy than emphasizing them trusting me. And I think that's what this study shows us, that the people who understand this, even if they're not Christians, it works. Well, let's keep going. We're still on this point number 4, good bosses or great bosses or great leaders or managers, or a few descriptions of what are the characteristics of these great bosses. Great bosses, our first subpoint, have an ability to see incremental growth. Incremental, I-N-C-R-E-M-E-N-T-A-L. Incremental growth in employees. This is what Gallup found. The best bosses can actually see their employees making progress and encourage them. Great bosses find out what is unique about each person and capitalize on it. what's unique about each individual. So they work on people's strengths and help them manage their weaknesses. And number three, and all these are really interrelated, great bosses individualize, average bosses generalize. Great bosses individualize, average bosses generalize. So they're able to turn one person's talent into performance because they think about individuals, not just general people. Any last thoughts on these four before we move on to four qualities of successful leaders? This section is taken from Strength-Based Leadership. I don't know how many have seen that book. It's the latest in Gallup's. And with most of Gallup's stuff, it's just another reason to sell codes for their StrengthFinder test. Although there is a little bit of information. I think the thing that's the most interesting about strength-based leaders is an extensive survey that they did. They asked 10,000 followers to identify the qualities of leaders that they follow willingly. Now, a few thoughts about the study. First of all, I've done a lot of reading of leadership books, and this is the first time anyone bothered to even think to ask followers. All leadership books are either based on a great leader, leadership secrets of Abraham Lincoln, leadership secrets of Genghis Khan. You've seen that one? That's an interesting one. And one of the ones that changed my life years ago was written by General Patton's aide-de-camp. It was the leadership secrets of George Patton. So they either focus on a particular leader, show characteristics, or they do massive studies of leaders and looking at their qualities. But Gallup thought, let's talk to followers. And let's ask followers, what are you looking for in leaders that you follow willingly? And the key word, the operative word, is willingly. Willingly. So we follow our leaders because that's our job. Well, what they're looking for is, what are the qualities of a person that you follow independent of a paycheck? The follow willingly, okay? These are the people I follow. I would follow regardless if I was working for them. They were my boss. They could fire me, hire me. That's the kind of person I will follow willingly. And they interviewed 10,001 people. I don't know why 10,001. I think just to irritate me. All those OCD individuals, just stop at 10,000 or go to 11,000. I don't know, whatever. But they found in their interview four qualities. And these are in order, the four qualities that they found of people that people look for in leaders they willingly follow. Successful leaders, and this won't surprise you, build trust. Build trust. That's number one. And remember Lencioni's pyramid, right? The bottom of the pyramid is trust. Yeah, it's the foundation of effective leadership. Now, Gallup took this information and did some extensive studies with it, especially using that 12 checklist, 12 indicators of engaged employees. And so they examined, what are the chances of employees being totally engaged at work when they didn't trust the company's leaders? The odds of an employee being engaged at work that doesn't trust the leaders is about 8%. 8% chance. 8%. I don't trust the leader, but I'm fully engaged. So that's the rare individual, just highly motivated about his own career, or just got personal standards. They don't trust, but they're still engaged. But 8%, so 92% of people, if you don't trust your leader, you will not be fully engaged. Now, conversely, the chances of employees being fully engaged at work, if they trust the organization's leadership, is 51%. 51%. Which, there's a couple interesting things that tells me. That's a six-fold increase. So, first of all, you don't have much chance of having engaged employees if they don't trust you. But the second thing is, just because they trust you doesn't mean, doesn't guarantee they'll be fully engaged. Which I think, what I've discovered in working with teams with these four things and doing some evaluation is, with this, all four have to be working. Because even if you build trust, if you're not meeting these other qualities, they're not going to be fully engaged. So it's the base, it's the foundation, it's the most important, but it doesn't guarantee fully engaged employees. And when we think about building trust, they look at it from two different perspectives. There is the perspective of character and the perspective of competence. Both of those have to be involved. In other words, it's possible to trust the competence of your boss. He is a totally competent manager. He knows what he's doing, highly educated, very smart, knows the business, can make things happen. As far as his competence level, I trust him. But character, I don't. You got to have both. But on the other hand, there might be a leader who you trust their character. This is a loving, kind, I know this person would never hurt me. They would always look out for my best interest. But he just doesn't really do a very good job of leading the team. And I don't trust him organizationally to get us where we need to go. See, both of those have to be in place. I've done some thinking about this over my last 35 years in my professional life, and I think there's two leaders, two bosses at different times in my life that I had. One of them, as far as competence, one of the most competent individuals I ever worked with. His ability to run an organization, get an organization where it needs to go, just second to none. At a competence level, total trust. But character, I wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw him. And so, even though huge trust, competence, character negates it. But I'm also thinking of a boss who, as far as character, if my life was threatened, if my family was in trouble, there are a few people I would call before this person. Few people I would trust more. If my life, I mean, it's down to, there's crises, it's a midnight hour. That person, I know he would come through for me. No doubt. 100%, almost implicit trust. But as far as his competence in running and managing an organization, I don't trust him as far as I could throw him. Both of them I would never work for again. Different reasons. One, I would certainly call and would like to be around and you know, hang around with, and certainly if there's problems. The other, no. But doesn't matter. You can't get me back working under those two different individuals for two totally different reasons. So they might say, do you trust me? I would say yes and no. So you have to look at it that way. Do the people that are following you, do they trust your character? Do they know this person cares about me? He's a man of integrity. The way we do things are upright and he fears the Lord. Great. That's important. And I think most important. Firstly important. But there's the other one. Are you competent? And, you know, what I faced a long time ago, the reality, I read this book, Joe Smith actually turned me on to it, called Management, a Biblical Approach. I read it in 1982 and then 1983. And it changed my whole life. His whole premise was that ministers are competent to preach, pray, cast out demons. You know, we could do that real good. But when it came to running an organization, we were clueless. And I realized just how true that was. And it was stupid to trust me to lead the organization that I led as a senior pastor, which is stupid, because I had no competence when it came to managing a growing organization, which is why it wasn't a growing organization. Why it was, you know, we'd have a big outreach, get a bunch of new people in, just to try to maintain last year's attendance rate. So trust is at two different levels, both character and at competence. Thoughts? Yeah, Rico? Microphone, Edgar?
Just a reaction to that book. This was 1982, 83.
Okay,
yeah. But now, in our time now, I think to be a senior leader, that's what's needed. You need to have, of course, ministry skills.
Yeah, no, I know.
And managerial skills.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, before when the ministry was starting, it was more, the highlight was more ministry skills.
Yeah.
So it's now you have to be good at both.
You do, yeah. And it's a real challenge, isn't it? Because how do you do that and not neglect our real mandate, the Acts chapter 6, to devote ourselves to prayer and the Word? And, I mean, that becomes a real challenge. I came across a rather extensive list of Earn Baxter podcasts, massive. And all real good quality podcasts. So I've been downloading and listening to Earn Baxter. Did you hear Earn Baxter and remember him? Okay, that was...
What's his first name?
Earn Baxter. Remember, E-R-N, yeah. So remember the Fort Lauderdale Five discipleship guys? So it was Charles Simpson, Derek Prince, Bob Mumford, Don Basham, and Earn Baxter. Now, in the early days of Maranatha, because I go back to 1976, and so these guys would come quite often. And Earn Baxter was a Canadian guy who actually, we're going to look, maybe if we get to it today, we're going to look at William Branham. And he was William Branham's, his manager. So, amazing statesman in the faith, died in the I think late 80s or early 90s. And so listening to Earn Baxter talking, I mean, this is 1970s, early 80s, and emphasizing the importance of focus on prayer and the Word. And if you never heard him preach, magnificent preacher, a spellbinding preacher who would, you would feel that you had been transported to the heavenly realm and you were at the throne and eternal matters and the significance of what we're doing became uppermost and practical concerns would just seem to melt. And it is an amazing encounter and experience. And so just thinking about, I mean, I want to have preaching that so captures and grips men's hearts that they're seized with the Great Commission and the call of God and the desire to give their life and sell everything, whatever cost. And it's great preaching is one of the main things. I mean, that's what got all of us, right? At a different point in our life, was hearing a message and feeling so caught up that nothing could compare. Which is being a part of that and giving my all for God's kingdom. And I so just long for having preachers that are equipped that at every one of our services we're preaching with that kind of power. And I mean, that involves a commitment to prayer and the Word that is really significant. And yet we've got this massive organization too that I mean, is a real part of our life. So how do we keep those things together? I don't know. Of course, you guys are involved in the day-to-day. I actually, when I'm not doing this, I get to be in prayer and the Word. So I don't have to do those things. But I don't know. Any thoughts about that? I'm interested in some feedback. Yeah, Ariel?
In Acts chapter 6, they emphasized that they needed deacons.
Yeah.
You were talking for a while about the possibility of, you know, introducing some deacons in the church, but I don't know how that will go about. I know that we have a team of pastors, and then after that are the admin staff.
Yeah.
But where do deacons come in? You know, are they like in some? I guess in some churches they're like elders.
Yeah.
And then the pastors are the ones that choose. They choose them, right?
Yeah. Well, different. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's different.
So will that help? So that we can focus more in the way we do things, like, because it, like what Jansen was saying, it's really a different ball game now. Just running a church, like in our case, we're running facilities, we have building contractors, we have janitors, security guards, we have to put CCTV systems. It's just a different thing. And then we have staff dev, we have, you know. It's a fight for us to even, you know, just to study the Word and then pray.
Well, hopefully this is kind of studying the Word, so maybe this qualifies. I don't know if deacons is the answer to us or for this situation. I think, in essence, we really have deacons. I mean, we really do. But you're looking at a very limited organizational structure. And just the nature of the church in the 21st century, it's a much more complicated organization. So I have to think that's a part of God's purpose. So the reality is we have to do both. We have to delegate more. We have to train more. We have to have more competent managers, deacons, administrators. But I don't think we're ever going to get to the point where we are not having to lead an organization. Robert?
I think the challenge as well is managing the expectations of people from the pastor.
Yeah.
I think because, again, when I move into Pioneer, I realize there's a lot of expectations.
You're my pastor.
You're my pastor, and coming from the culture that everything flows from the pastor, you're trying to, as much as you can, delegate and disseminate, but the culture still goes.
It's true.
I mean, and I'm an admin guy. I like working on systems and facilities and, you know, structures and stuff like that. But I think it's the whole balance of now, okay, aside from that, then you have to meet with a lot of people because you're a pastor. You have to sit down. And then now you have to sit down with your staff and make them happy as well. I mean, it's just, I mean, the demand, I think the culture raised up on expectations, and sometimes you want to change that as much as you can, but it's difficult because you're fighting against a culture that demands that, in a sense. And I know you're not giving into that, but again, that's where the whole balance also where is it really difficult?
Yeah.
Because you tend to, you know, you want to go back to, I mean, go and study in Word, and then, but the culture.
Sure.
Yep.
Ultimately, if the preaching of the Word suffers, though, in the end, it all unravels. The organization might keep growing, but the kind of people and the quality of their faith in God really changes. So, is it Carlos?
I'm currently listening to a podcast, audiobook actually, series by Dave Kraft, who is a executive coach and a pastor for Mars Hill. He coached Mark Driscoll when Mark Driscoll was experiencing organizational growth and then was burning out. So the audiobook is called Leaders Who Last. And one of the things he does mention, he's 70 years old now, dealing with cancer, 50 years in ministry. Pretty interesting guy. So, but he does talk about exactly what we're saying right now. And he said, it was interesting with the way he said it. He said, we need, as leaders, we need to be very conscious of our people time. And we need to be very purposeful on where we're putting our people time.
Yeah.
Given the work responsibilities we have only oh so much face time with individuals.
Yeah.
And he said, he started categorizing, he gave a list like needy people,
yeah.
Then trainable people, leader willing people who want to go to the next level. And you know, he just started giving broad categories of where people are at. And he said, normally the needy people will clamor for your most of your time. And then he warns against it. And he goes, learn to delegate needy people to people who that can be their focus and energy.
Yeah.
But as a leader of the organization, you need to invest most of your time on the people who can be the next level leader and who can help carry the load in the future. And he goes, it's a fight. He really did say, it's a fight to purposefully invest your time instead of just putting it where there's the greatest need. Because
yeah.
That's not always the most effective option. So I thought it was just an interesting point there. So.
And we do have a clear mandate from Scripture. We will not neglect the Word of God in prayer. So, number two, successful leaders, second quality, show compassion. So people think, the kind of people I'm looking for, I want someone that I trust, he builds trust, but he cares for me, shows compassion. Gallup asked, and this is an amazing statistic, they asked 10 million people to respond to this item. 10 million. That's a rather extensive base.
Yep,
my supervisor seems to care about me as a person. They asked that question. And then they were supposed to respond on a scale of 1 to 5. The people who agreed with that statement, yes, they have a high ranking for that. They found, number one, significantly more likely to stay with the organization. They will last longer. Have much more engaged customers. Are substantially more productive and provide more profitability for the organization. The first Gallup book that they did when they first started talking about strength was called First Break All the Rules. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
That had the old 1.0 test, and it was the first book that Buckingham did that. And it was a massive study of the most successful managers. And they found that the best leaders actually broke the rules. It's two specific rules that they broke. Number one, the first rule that you're taught in all management schools, all training, is you treat everybody alike. All the great leaders break that rule. They treat everybody differently. And the second rule that they broke, all these great managers, they broke this rule. These are the two things that they had in common. Across all different spectrums of organizations and nations, etc. The second rule that they broke is the primary rule of management is you work for the company. And the company's interests are first. They found that all the great managers broke that rule. They were more concerned about the individual success of the people that work for them than their own organization that they worked for. And they communicated that to their employees. And so they found this amazing thing happen, which would seem to be counterintuitive, is when a person would come to this kind of manager and say, I've been offered a better job, higher paying, better benefits, this organization, I'm not sure what to do. When the manager would say, by all means, take it. It's a great opportunity for your family, more money. You've been a great blessing here. Go. I want you to be, I want you, your career to go. What happened is that they found that statistically more people stayed longer with those kind of leaders. Because what happened is that people would rather take less money, less benefits to work with someone who they knew was focused on my best interest. And that's fascinating. The great leaders, they break the rule. They are more concerned, not just about my organization and what you're contributing. Like if someone says, you know, I'm thinking about this thing or that thing, going here, going there, what's our response? Man, you're so vital to me. If we lost you, to be able to replace you would take so long. Do we try to keep them? Or do we communicate, go, go, go? I think probably in general we do pretty good at that because we do have a higher kingdom mentality. That's showing compassion. That they care about me personally as an individual. Number three and four, and they sort of tie together. Successful leaders provide stability. Provide stability. So this is something people are looking for. In the midst of constant change, right? What was Joey saying? Oh, maybe that was a church, I guess. Yeah, because you were there. Yeah, right. Yeah. Stability is an illusion, right? Yeah. Constant change is here. What people are looking for is in the midst of constant change, some semblance of stability. They know that things will be adjust, things are moving. I mean, we're always changing. But in the midst of it, there's the kind of stability, a stability that first of all comes from you and your character. You don't waffle and change. You're not one way one day and a different way, not moody. There's a stability there. But you create an environment that even in the midst of change, you're managing that change in such a way that people feel stable. And then number four, which is sort of the contrast, successful leaders create hope. Create hope. I would call that's the visioning component, right? So successful leaders convince people that their participation in this organization will get them places that they can't get any other way. They create this vision that if I'm with you, with this group, we're going somewhere that I can't get on my own. I can only get with this team together, you see. They create this massive amount of hope. Now, what I found, I was working with this one team in this particular church, and when I think about this team, what they do best, they create hope better than any organization that I've seen. They convince people that their life is significant and can accomplish something better than any organization. I mean, people come there because they get inspired. They see a vision for their life and they want to be a part. But this organization was having a significant problem with, first of all, they hadn't grown in about 8 years. Although they had a lot of new people, but they hadn't grown numerically in 8 years. But also, the people who were still there, there was a lot of disgruntled people among the higher volunteers or the people who had higher positions of leadership, a lot of feelings of cynicism and jaded. And I realized in just looking at the team is that although they created massive amounts of hope, they failed to provide stability through constant change, putting all kinds of resources into one particular project, and then almost overnight starting over on something different. And a number of different things like that. So they created this huge amount of hope. And people got in the organization, man, they're going somewhere, they were highly motivated. But then things were changing constantly. And that hope, well, for a number of them, it just meant, I'm out of here. But for the ones who stayed, the hope, it sort of turned inward. And now it became cynicism. Yeah, right. We'll see how long this one lasts. And they stayed, you know, because sometimes people just stay in churches because it's harder to find a new one. You know, you got to start over relationships. You got to go, and your kids might not like it. You know, at least they're somewhat happy here. So this is America, at least. You know, people stay in church just because it's too inconvenient to go somewhere else. That's the ultimate consumer mentality. But they stay, but their hearts aren't there. So these were the four. I thought they were interesting. I gave them an assignment, and I just left it for you to see what the assignment was. And you might even want to think about this for yourself, though, although I'm not giving this an assignment to you like I did to them. is what Gallup does in the Strength-Based Leader book is they take each one of the 34 themes and they have a section where they take each one of these, trust, compassion, stability, and hope, and they list, say, for strategic, how a person with strategic can naturally build trust, show compassion, provide stability, create hope. And they go on to your next theme. And so I ask people just to think about their themes, because it was a strength finder exercise, and how, because I am relator, how can I use that particular wiring to do a better job of providing stability for the people in my team? So anyway, I'll leave that for you. Just do whatever you want with it. Any final thoughts? Do you understand why they were interested in you at least having the same language? Yeah. No thoughts? Yeah.
There's a book similar to what you shared. It's called Leadership Challenge by Kuzis and Posner.
Yeah.
But I think almost everything is the same except for compassion. So he basically identified four, but it's different from character and competence. But when I was reading the book, I was even at the back of my mind questioning about where's that caring part?
Yeah.
Because I don't know, I think they've interviewed or asked a survey based on the leaders.
Yeah.
And not much of...
Did they ask the followers?
Yeah, not the followers. Yeah. And so that's why at the back of my mind, the compassion
the followers.
Problem. Yeah. So.
It is an amazing that it took so long for anyone to think. Let's ask the followers. That to me is the most interesting thing about the survey. That, I mean, it was 2009, I think, before Gallup, anybody had the idea. All right, probably then let's just take a break now and then we'll carry on at 11 with probably church history. So take your break, 11 o'clock.